Hello, ActorCasters, and welcome to episode number 25. Thank you so much for being here, where you are getting the opportunity to learn the ins and outs of the entertainment industry from some of the top experts in entertainment. If you haven't already done so, head to actorcast.fm and sign up for our newsletter. This way you could find out about upcoming guests, showcases, and more. You could visit our website at actorcast.fm. So for today's episode, we are talking with independent theater producer, general manager, and theatrical consultant Sharon Fallon. Sharon brings a unique perspective to her work, having worked in both the commercial and nonprofit theater industry for over 20 years. She's worked on a wide variety of different shows, both on Broadway and off, and has done everything from showcases, readings, early development, workshops, and full-fledged productions. Sharon certainly knows her stuff when it comes to the producing and general management side of the theater industry, and that's why I wanted to have her on the show today. A lot of times as performers, we don't necessarily understand how that side of the business works, but I think it's important to have an understanding of how this well-oiled machine, or hopefully well-oiled machine, works in this business. We talk about her career, how she got started in theater producing, some of the differences between different types of producers within Broadway, how some of the major responsibilities in producing a show, whether it be in a regional theater, on Broadway, or on a smaller scale, how those responsibilities change. We talk about the development process of what her process is like in developing a new show, and we talk about her work as a consultant. If you like this episode, head to actorcast.fm. Let me know your thoughts. I would love to hear from you. You are in for a great episode with Sharon. I would love to hear what you think. So without further ado, let me please introduce today's guest of ActorCast, Sharon Fallon. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the ActorCast. Today, we have Sharon Fallon joining us today. She is an independent theater producer, general manager, as well as a theatrical consultant, and I'm very excited to have you here, Sharon.
Well, thank you. I'm excited to be here too, Patrick.
Yes, we had the opportunity to connect. I guess it was a few months ago. We got connected through doing the LinkedIn challenge the Actors Fund. I believe you were an ambassador at the time that I was doing the challenge. After especially having connected with you and learning about your background, I definitely wanted to have you on the show.
Well, thank you. That's really exciting.
We, of course, have a lot of actors who tune into this show, but also a variety of different people who work in the entertainment industry as well. So I'm wondering if you could just maybe tell us a little bit about yourself and what brought you into the theater producing world. What was it that made you interested in it?
Well, I have a very broad background in the theater and have been in this industry, I mean, literally since I was 17 years old. I kind of lucked out and got a job when I graduated from high school as an actor. And that's what I wanted to do. And that's what I wanted to be when I grew up. And I did that for a really long time. I came to New York and had some really good success as an actor. I actually made a good portion of my living acting. But there was some point where I was acting here in New York and I started getting involved with a couple of small theater companies. And I had an opportunity to direct, which I adored. And then when I was directing, I realized I was sort of doing everything in order to make the production happen, like designing sets and building scenery and going with somebody to go costume shopping. And the more I kept thinking about it, the more I thought to myself, gee, the acting stuff is not really working for me anymore. And I mean, quite frankly, I'll tell you, I just didn't like my agent telling me what to do and where to go because I really didn't want to leave New York. And I started doing more and more management stuff. I was an artistic director of the small theater company after having been an actor and director there for a while. And I kind of thought, gee, I'd like to try my hand at producing since I'm pretty much doing that. And wearing all the hats, maybe it would be kind of interesting to just wear one hat. Well, when you wear one hat as a producer, you do all the jobs anyway, so it really doesn't matter. So I kind of took a chance and started sending my resume out to every theater producer listed in the theatrical index.
Oh, wow.
And I'm telling you, this was so long ago, this was on paper. And because I had a temp job, where I had learned how to use Excel, I started getting calls from lots of people. And I was very lucky because one of the places that called me said that I went in and I interviewed with them, and it was sort of a one-man band. It was just a solo producer because I liked the, when I walked into his office, he had all these posters on the wall. And I was like, oh my God, did you produce all these shows? And he looked at me like I was crazy and said, yes, I did. But I loved the variety of work that he had done. You know, he had produced Annie and My One and Only, and then years later produced Sam Shepard's Lie of the Mind. So I liked
Wow.
his view on variety of material. And he said he produced things that he was crazy for, that, you know, he wanted to do things that he was passionate about because that was the easiest way to raise money. So I decided I wanted to work for him because I kind of liked that point of view. And then I was really very lucky because this was long enough ago where people still had offices and they still hired assistants to sort of apprentice. So I was learning a great deal because it was just me and him. We were in a large office with other companies, other theater companies, but that's what really kind of made it stick because I really enjoyed reading the contracts, learning how a Broadway show was produced, how to do a show out of town to sort of gauge interest and gauge merit. And I went there and I never wanted to leave. So I was
Well,
there for about 6 months, and he and his wife were older. I mean, he was like an old timer producer. His name was Lewis Allen. And after about 6 months, they said to me, would you like to run the business? And like, what?
wow, after only 6 months.
Well, it's a long story, but I found an enormous accounting error in a spreadsheet, which found him a whole lot of money that nobody had been tracking prior to me being there. And that was like the first thing they said. You have to track everything because nobody tracks. And because they knew how to use Excel, word to all, learn how to use Excel. You know, I found this big, huge financial error in his favor. And they were, do you want to, you want, we need you to be our feet, our eyes, our ears. We need you on the ground because we're a little old. And older, and we don't have the wherewithal to do the amount of work that it takes to produce a show. So that's how I got started in producing on Broadway.
Wow, that's amazing. I'm always inspired hearing from entertainment professionals and especially producers too. A few years ago, I read this book called I Want to Be a Producer. Not because I wanted to be a producer, but I was very curious on how the role of a producer works. And after reading that book, I was just like, wow, producers, they do so many things. I was just fascinated by it. And it's amazing to hear your story of how you got involved with it. I'm wondering if you could share with our listeners what the difference is between an executive producer and a lead producer, or perhaps different types of maybe just distinguish the different types of producers out there. I think this would be helpful for all entertainment professionals who are tuning in, so they have a good sense of okay, what does the role producer mean depending on what kind of producer you are?
It's a really, Executive producing is a very interesting concept, if you will, that has emerged over the last maybe 5, 6, 7 years. The way I look at it, an executive producer is to theater what a showrunner is to television. So let me tell you a little bit about my company and what I do now, and that'll probably help shed some light on the different types of producing or producers. About, I don't know, 8 or 9 years ago, I had a lot of people coming to me with projects that weren't quite early development projects, which weren't quite garnering attention that they probably should have. And I started to realize that oftentimes people have a good project, whether it be a producer or an artist-driven production, and they don't know what to do. Because you can't really go to college and get a degree in producing. You can if you live in the UK, but in the United States, that degree doesn't exist. So, what I started to learn was where people needed help and how, with my experience, I could help them. And so, that's when I came up with this concept of something I call practical producing. So when someone hires me to executive produce for them, whether it is a producer or a artist who's got a project and they want to produce it themselves, a lot of what I do is work with them on day-to-day how to do it. That's why I call it practical. How do you get an option? How do you create a budget? How do you hire? So that's kind of what the executive producing thing is. A lead producer is someone who discovers, finds, excavates a project that they want to hold on to and produce. So they become the lead producer by way of optioning the material and then putting together a company in order to exploit the material. I don't really like the
Gotcha.
word exploit, but that's the word we use. And a lot of producers, especially in the Broadway industry, come from other professions, oftentimes from finance and business and legal or whatever. And so, as far as the nuances of producing, they're kind of new to the game. So when I created my company, the main reason I was interested in doing this is because I really wanted to help people succeed in a business that I'm kind of passionate about. Kind of, really. So anyway, I think it's really important to have somebody that you can speak to in a way that, like I say, there are no stupid questions and you don't know what you don't know. So if something should come up and somebody doesn't know what a recoupment table is, they shouldn't feel embarrassed to come to me and say, I have no idea what this means. And not only that, I don't know how to read it. So I am able to kind of talk them through and walk them through a lot of things that have to do with financing, contracts, hiring, future productions, things that a lot of people don't understand that this is the way it works. You would be surprised how many producers, early career, and when I say that, I'm not putting an age limit on it, don't understand that producers don't make any money unless the production is successful. So everything leading up to your first week of ticket sales, pretty much the producer is responsible for all of those finances.
Wow.
And they're either raising the money through their various sources or they're putting their own money in, but they are not making a salary and they are not making a fee. Those things come later after the show starts to make money. So people are always saying to me, but producers make all this money. And I'm like, eh, not unless the show is really, really successful. And that is something that a lot of people do not realize. So in the way the industry works today, a lot of people have very small offices. They work from home. So having the opportunity to train people the way I was trained are very, very slim, which is why I felt the need for this business model that I have. A lot of times people will come to me and say, can you read this play and tell me if it has legs? That's part of the consulting thing. Most plays, musicals are really my thing. I think everything has legs if you have the right people working on the project who can really bring their expertise to bring the project to fruition. And so when people call me for consulting things, they're asking me anything from, can you read this and give me a take on it, to someone just gave me this budget and I have no idea what it means. Can you walk me through the budget and what these line items are? Most line items on a budget are pretty self-explanatory, fees, salaries, et cetera. But then you get into items where you're like, well, why does the set cost so much? And why is this price not in with this price? So, you know, a lot of times it's just like the going rate and what a designer is being paid, who's at the top of their career, as opposed to a designer who's new to the industry.
This is fascinating, and it's great to have people like you working in this industry that allows producers. I assume it's mostly producers that you work with to kind of help guide them in figuring out how to produce a show effectively, or is it primarily producers, or is it kind of a wide variety of different?
It's a wide variety. I have a project that's artist driven. And these ladies have worked really, really hard on a musical called Mother Freaking Hood for about, I want to say, 3-4 years now. We were supposed to have a production last year, which, of course, because of COVID, never happened. So now we're sort of kind of starting it all up over and over again. And I actually have a meeting with them tomorrow to talk them through budget to see what it's going to cost if we end up continuing forward with the theater we were working with in Chicago. I think that's another thing that is sort of unique to what I do. I have colleagues and connections across the country, really through an organization called the National Association of Musical Theaters. So I have a broad reach of places to go with shows that are in early development. And not only am I working for other people, but I also have my own projects that I'm working on. So, you know, it's like I have a very wide net to help people figure out where something belongs, because I truly believe not every show belongs on Broadway. Not every show even belongs in New York. It really depends on the subject matter, the tone. Because in New York, you always have to remember you are competing for dollars with big shows. Like, you know, if you're a mom and want to take your, you know, and you want to go to the theater and you have a couple kids, you want to see Lion King.
Right.
You're not
right.
necessarily going to like a small storefront theater to see, I don't know, whatever. So you have to really understand how the art and the finances balance. And that is really my focus, you know, finding a way to bridge the gap between the two so that you can be artistically successful and hopefully garner those great reviews. And at the same time, you know, be financially stable in your decision making.
Yes. I love how you bring this up, Sharon. I think that's such an important element, or the finances that go into the arts. I think that we as artists, a lot of times we're very caught up in the creative side and the artistic vision of things that we often neglect the important aspect of finances. And you know, so with that said, I'm wondering, what are some of the big differences between producing a large scale show, perhaps one on Broadway, from one that is at a perhaps a smaller theater, maybe a regional theater elsewhere in the country?
Well, I mean, if you just want to talk budgets, you know, Broadway budgets from the time I started in this business, you know, kind of went from like $5 million to like $20 million. You know, it shows are expensive as technical things become bigger and bolder and, you know, just a lot. So you're spending a lot more money on a Broadway production than you would be on, say, you know, a commercial production, like, let's say, Chicago. The capacity to return investment on a smaller show, of course, is, you know, I mean, if you only have 300 seats to sell a night as opposed to 1,000 seats a night and your pricing is different, you know, like, say, your top ticket price is $80 as opposed to $159, you know, then your return of investment is a little different because it's a little slower. But your budget's not so big to begin with. There's also the other option to work with a regional theater who's already budgeted for a production. And if you as a producer want to work with them, you work within their budget, but maybe you're raising some money or writing a check yourself to enhance the production, which means that you are giving them a little more money than they would normally spend. So say, you know, I'm not going to name names, but there are a couple of theaters that will be, our mission is to hire people in the area, but we'll allow you to bring in one or two people from New York, but you have to pay for them. So you'd be paying for their salary and their housing and their transportation and all of those things because their mission is to hire people in their locality. You might be at a point where you're looking to bring something back from that show besides the production, the like a finished product. So you might be paying a little bit more to build a set or get the costumes designed or something like that. But it depends. It's every like individual production to themselves, how they want to do that. I've worked on Broadway shows that were really lucky. They knew what their theater was in New York when they were out of town. So they were able to come back with like the production kind of intact. And I worked on other things where they didn't know where they were going and so had to kind of guesstimate as they went along. you know, it's like, oh, maybe we'll be in this theater, so the back wall needs to be this wide. So it just really depends on what your path is. All great producing is goal-oriented and also people who have the ability to speak creative speak. And so if you need to understand how to give a note, how to talk to a director, how to keep your creative team together, your designers. So you need to learn what the path of communication is, whether that be like all notes go through the director, or if you've been working with the writers from like day one when they just really started putting the show together, that you have an open dialogue with them. But communication and understanding your goals and financing are really, really important.
Yeah. I can imagine that, you know, just based on the different budgets that you were talking about millions of dollars, it must be of the utmost importance that producers stay on top of those things. You know, I think it's been amazing hearing about your career working as a producer, and you have worked on a lot of shows in development. So I'm wondering if you could share what that process is like. How do you begin working on these projects, and how do you help shows get to that next level?
I hate the term next level. I don't have a new term for that yet, but sometimes I see things early on and I just take a real strong fondness for them. Sometimes I read something. I'm working on a show that's written by a UK writing team that I helped them with at the New York Musical Theatre Festival. Remember that?
Yes,
It was one of the final shows the final year. And I have to tell you, I went to this event, and the minute the composer picked up her guitar and strummed the first chord, I said, I want to work on that show. I had no idea. I knew what the show was about, but I didn't have any. There was something, and I literally chased her around for half an hour until she would sit down and talk with me. And because there was just something that I was like, that's the thing I need to do. That's the one I want to do right now. So for me, when I am working on something personally, that's one of my personal projects, as opposed to something somebody hires me to work on, it's something that kind of hits me in the heart. Something about the music, something about a book scene, whatever it is, there's something that just grabs me. Usually it's really good structure, but that's another conversation for another day. And so that's really important to me. If people bring me projects that I think are, that have something about them that has an appeal to a ticket buyer, but it's not quite there yet, then I help them work through what are their goals and are they willing to sit down and think through and make changes that are important to the development of the piece. I always tell people, you get one chance. You want to have a big, industry reading in New York? Fantastic. But make sure you're ready. Because if you're not ready, then people are seeing sub work and they're not seeing the potential. Because some people can't see potential. They go, I didn't like the story. I didn't like that actor, whatever. But you have to make sure that your show is ready to go. Procter and Gamble doesn't launch a product until they have done a ton of work on that product and make sure it's ready to be released. So in our industry, I always kind of put this back toward, what happens in the broader world, because for me, that's how you find investors, to be able to explain it to them that way. But for me, all levels of development are like Procter and Gamble, putting out like a new kind of paper towel. You put it through a lot of process. You put it through a lot of, focus groups. I'm not saying you should do focus groups for theater pieces that are in early development, but you spend a lot of time sitting at tables reading because the words have to come out. It's drama. It's not like you're reading a novel. And so you spend time reading and listening and hearing the songs and seeing how it all works together. The thing that drives me crazy is when I go and see a show and I'm sitting, I have this analytic brain that just turns on when the lights go out, where I'm sitting there and it's all so good. And then all of a sudden I'm jarred out and like going, oh my God, wasn't anybody standing in the back of the theater to see this problem? Like this should have been fixed a long time ago before they got into previews, because it's something that just doesn't ring true to the piece. When I work with writers and when I work with producers, there's a lot of teaching going on. 2 weeks ago, I had a long conversation with my writers who were on a new draft of the show that was supposed to open in Chicago. And we had a long conversation about the art of the reprise. Why that doesn't need to be a new song, why that needs to be a reprisal from, Act One, Scene Three. Because we're moving into the area that that has to happen. I will be totally honest, I never took a course on how to write a musical in my life. Although recently I've been watching a lot of the webinars on Maestra, And if your audience doesn't know what that is, they should. I believe it's maestra.org or maestra.com, Maestra, Maestra as opposed to maestro. It's an organization for women in musical theater who are on the music side, composers, book writers, musicians, musical directors, and just a little, the organization is amazing. And another little pitch for them. If you're looking for female crew, team, creatives, they have an incredible database of like, you need a violin player, you can type in violin. And it's really like an amazing group. And the professionals who are working in the industry are the ones doing these hour and a half webinars, which are really, truly quite valuable. I've learned because, like you, I have this curiosity that just doesn't ever go away. And in this industry, you have to continue being curious because if you're not, you're going to get stuck and you're going to not understand how something works. And being a general manager, I like to know how things work because it helps me with my budgets and it also helps me with bidding. So if I see we need like, I don't know, 1,000 feet of cable for a teeny tiny theater, I'm like, what do I need all that cable for? And then I will call the designer and ask them, do you have time to explain to me how this works? And they do. And I'm like, oh, now I understand why we need all that cable. So the next time around, when they don't ask for that much cable, then I can go to them and say, don't you need more cable? I think it's really important. I think it's vitally important for a producer to understand how things work to a certain degree. So I'm big on not wasting money. And so if you understand how things work to a certain degree, then you understand the necessity for programmers and why paying a programmer more money for a specific period of time in the long run saves you tech time dollars. Working with designers who are able to, as I refer to it, dealing with real estate, like understanding, like, oh, I can't put the lights there because there's this here. And like people like that who can figure those things out early on save you a lot of time, save you a lot of money, and save you a lot of aggravation. So if you as a producer understand what this stuff is, you can really work with your general manager to keep your budget under control. As opposed to carte blanche, we're all going to come into the theater at the same time on the same day, and we're all going to try to work at the same time. Don't work that way.
Right. Oh, well, I think
The sound designer needs quiet time. If people are banging, and building scenery, that's not going to work for him.
I think it goes back to like what you were saying earlier about how the producer really need to have a an understanding of really all aspects of the theater to kind of have a outsider perspective on making sure that things are running like a well-oiled machine. And I'm wondering if you could share, just from your experience, what are the best ways that productions can be both financially viable as well as artistically satisfying and successful?
I think a lot of it has to do with three things. One is working with general managers who understand what the needs of the production are. So a general manager produces your budget. And as a producer, like say you're doing a musical and on Broadway and your Broadway budget is, I don't know, $10 million. How to divide up that $10 million to give you what you want as the producer. Then you have to go and look at what the creatives are intending, the designers, while working with the director. I feel having lots of conversations with the director early on is really, really helpful. And then you have to I said there were three things. So it was budget. It was, oh, it's understanding where your show is. Back in the olden days, when a show went into previews, there was not as much change in the show as being done now. So we've gone from less rehearsal time to more in theater preview time. So a lot of times things are being shaped and redone while the show is on stage. So you might be rehearsing a new number that's going to be put in the show on Thursday, but you have to go perform that show on Tuesday night. And so you have a couple of days to get that together. A lot of that work used to be done in the rehearsal studio. And finally, I think that the person in charge, the lead producer, needs to really understand what this production is, whether it's a play or a musical, and being like the best storyteller ever. I know that seems like a lot, but you've got to find the ways to balance these all together. I said to you earlier that an executive producer sort of works as a in the same way as a showrunner for a television series. And if you look to see what the showrunner does, they're dealing with writing, they are dealing with, production calls, they're dealing with finances, they're making sure they have the people on the set the days they need to do the show. Now they're making sure they have COVID protocols. So they're helping to orchestrate the entire puppet show, if you will. And in the theater industry, where the executive producer has become sort of a new title, is that again, there are a lot of people coming into this industry that need guidance. And a lot of times the general manager is also acting as the executive producer. It's not exactly one of my favorite ways that it's done, but it is happening because people need the additional time to learn. Does that all make sense?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's amazing as I've kept saying time and time again how work goes into producing. It really is amazing. And I'm sure too to kind of when you were talking about how like the producer needs to be a good storyteller, I'm sure that in a lot of ways is articulated through the marketing efforts for the show as well, or at least I would imagine.
It really is. I was going to say, we haven't even touched on marketing and advertising. Advertising budgets tend to be quite big. My very good friend and colleague, I was moderating a panel about how to advertise, what comes first, the key art or the logo. And he got really frustrated. And this was about 5 or 6 years ago. And he goes, "You know what the biggest problem is right now?" And I went, "No, that's why we're having this panel." And he said, "Our advertising budgets have not changed for 15 years. I'm
Wow.
still given the same amount of money to put together an advertising campaign that I was 15 years ago. And now we are dealing with the creation of more stuff because we have all of this digital marketing." And I'm having still, like for a big Broadway show, sometimes the for a musical specifically, the advertising budget before the show even opens will be $1 million.
Wow, that's
And
amazing.
because you're trying to get your product out in front of a very big audience who you think are gonna want to do the show, so you have to produce a commercial, you have to produce a radio commercial, even though people think radio is dead. If you don't live in Manhattan, trust me, it's not. People still listen to the radio on their drive home from work or to work. And now you're dealing with a lot of social, and you have content, and it costs money to create content. This isn't like I'm just gonna like post on my Instagram page. This is content that's being built for the Instagram page. If you are not in New York, you can really kind of go crazy with grassroots. When I was doing when we were sort of gearing up for production in Chicago, one day I took the L, which stopped about, I don't know, 15 blocks from the theater. But the theater was located on a street with lots of shops and businesses. So I came in really early and sort of walked around to look to see what the neighborhood looked like, and was going into stores asking people, did you know there was a theater in this neighborhood? And they were all like, of course I do. And then I was talking to people, would they be interested in doing events with us? The show is predominantly geared toward women. So I was looking for, these were all like little shops that weren't, as I refer to them as mall stores, like the Gap or things like that. These were like smaller, high-end places to shop. And, and I would just talk to owners and managers about, were they interested? So I'm making my way to the theater, and the artistic director is standing in front of the theater with his arms crossed. And I looked at him and I went, oh my goodness, it looks like I'm in trouble. And he goes, where have you been? He goes, all these people are calling me going, how do I book tickets?
Wow.
And I said, oh, I'm doing grassroots marketing, man. It's like, I'm trying to get to know the neighborhood. I'm not some like crazy New Yorker who thinks I know what I'm doing and, going to change, redesign the wheel. I said, grassroots marketing, you've got to get your community involved. And I said, there's a school over there. You don't think I'm going to be not standing there handing out like flyers to people that are picking their kids up from after school programs? Of course I am.
Right.
Because I'm looking for a specific sort of audience for a very specific show. And this is how you grassroots. And you want your community to be involved so they come and see the show because it's right down the street. Yeah. I would stand in front of the theater sometimes, Patrick, and count all the women walking by with baby carriages. And I would think, see, there's my audience. They're just like walking up and down the street. And, and then that would give me and I would go back into the theater and say, this is like a mom neighborhood. This is where a lot of our audience is going to live. And now we need to figure out how to bring them into this project.
Wow. Yeah, that's amazing. I mean, that alone is proof that you truly are a producer at heart. I think it's amazing. And you enough for joining us on the show today, for sharing your insights into the wide world of producing, for sharing your tips and advice for our listeners who are tuning in. I cannot thank you enough for joining us on the show, Sharon.
Well, thank you. It's been my pleasure.
You could share where our listeners could find out more information about you and all the great work that you do. Maybe we have some listeners who are joining us today who are working on something. Where could they learn more?
Right now, they can learn anything they want to know about me on LinkedIn.
Great.
So I have a LinkedIn profile, and that's where they can find me. Sharon Fallon.
Awesome. I'll make sure to include the link to your profile in our show notes. So listeners out there, all you have to do is scroll down, click that link in the show notes. Highly recommend getting in touch with Sharon. Sharon, I wonder if you just have any parting words of advice for our listeners today.
If you're a writer, keep working. If you want, I tell this to all early career producers. Find something to produce, anything, do a little thing. There are a lot of companies that have, festivals. Just kind of get in there so you can actually see how things work. And that's how you learn. This is an on-the-job learning. And people in our industry are very, very gracious with their time. and they are happy to answer questions and help you along the way. That's really what my advice to writers and to producers are. And eventually you'll all find each other. So you'll be able to find those shows that you want to produce. And writers, you'll find those producers that you want to work with.
Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of ActorCast. You can head to actorcast.fm and leave us a review to let us know what you thought of this episode. If you haven't already done so, sign up for our newsletter to get the latest and greatest information on upcoming guests, showcases, and much more. You can also become a member of ActorCast by going to actorcast.fm and clicking the membership tab. As a member of ActorCast, you'll gain access to exclusive content, including bonus episodes, access to our private online community, and live sessions with yours truly. I look forward to catching you all in the next episode, and you know what time it is. It's time to go out and create.